Welcome into the latest episode of the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Fowler, and today is Monday, December 6th. This week's conversation focuses on Trilgectory, a digital health company that utilizes artificial intelligence to inform patients with cancer on their treatment journey. I spoke with Zvia Bader, the CEO and co-founder of Trilgectory, and Karine Perrault, who recently was diagnosed with breast cancer. We touched on the perceived disconnect between the pharmaceutical industry and patients, removing barriers to testing access, and the important action items that need to be prioritized to improve access for women with cancer. Both women gave really interesting perspectives, and I'm excited for you to take a listen to this conversation. Just to start off, would you both mind introducing yourself with your name and then just a brief background, you know, a title maybe, or just a little bit more about yourself to kind of get started?
Okay, sure. Well, my name is Karine Perrault. I am a 39. I'm 39 year old. I'm from Montreal. I'm also French as a second language high school teacher. And yeah, I was diagnosed with cancer in March 2020.
And my name is Zvia Bader. I'm from New Jersey, originally from Israel. I was diagnosed in 2013, December 2013, with metastatic melanoma. Through my journey, that was like, I was like to laugh. It's like 3 clinical trials, 8 surgeries, 5 approved drugs. I've been NED for 4 years now, and I've dedicated my life to build Trilgectory, which is basically a platform that makes sure that patients have the tools and the means to have access to all the relevant treatment for them so they can make the best choices in how they want to battle and how they want to win.
Perfect. Yeah, and my first question really was just about Trilgectory and what that is. Is there anything else that you have that can really expand on exactly what Trilgectory is and the main goals it has?
So Trilgectory build an artificial intelligence engine that basically can read through treatment protocols. So from clinical trials protocol to publication and understand the eligibility criteria. So what we can do is mimic a mind of an oncologist, but do it in a much larger scale because of our technology. That allows us to actually have a patient come in and build a profile in a matter of 5 minutes, actually see prequal to treatment, clinical trials, see exactly those that are personalized match to him. And moreover, we help him better understand it. So we curate the information from the researcher language to a patient language. We present to them the answer to the key question a patient asks. And we, to top it all off, we actually have a team that is there to support them. So not only we make it accessible to them, we have a team that is able to give them better understanding, answer any question, and connect them, help them connect to site if they want to. We want patients to know all their options. So what we also do with that is we take all the data we collect from patients and actually let you see other patients exactly with your profile. So not just because they have breast cancer, but breast cancer, triple negative, recurrence, what biomarkers, what treatment they've received, what was the outcome for them, how aggressive would they read them, any side effects. So really let patients get all the data points they need in order to make a decision about what's next, what treatment. We then take this data and also de-identify it, of course, push it back to the biopharma. Because one of the things is there is a complete disconnect, if you think about it, between the industry and the patient. The industry talks to physician, to hospital. They don't talk to us patient, right? They don't really know our data. They don't know what motivates us and what's concerned to us. And we take all this de-identified data, where we are, what is our concern about a treatment? How would we rate it? What do we need to know? What's a limitation for us? Too many visits to the hospital, not enough testing well in the protocol, and push it back to the pharma so they can basically mitigate those discrepancies and help remove some of those barriers and make their treatment have better match to patient needs and more accessible to patients. So really bringing the patient as a decision maker and as the center of it all back to the front stage.
Right. And if I understand correctly, Karine, this is a process that you've really undergone in the last year or so. Could you kind of talk briefly about your experience and what Trilgectory has done really to what she was kind of getting at to kind of close the gap between industry and patient?
Yeah. Well, I first noticed something wrong with my left breast. It was in January. And at the time I had no clue. I was like, it's not cancer. There's no way. I have a BRCA gene, which is, a gene that's being like from father to, and we have it in my family, but I tested negative for that in my early 20s. So in my head, if you get it really, really young, like 37 is pretty young. There are women have, like, I know they have like 25 and they're diagnosed. They have the same diagnosis as me. So like I was kind of shocked, and it was March 2020 when they found out what it was, and that I was already stage four, which means like metastasis to the liver and bones, which was really unexpected after such a short amount of time. And what happens is that, like, first thing you do is, like, everybody, like, you go on the internet and you look for information, right? Like, before going to the doctor, people do that all the time. I was not one of those person, but in that type of situation, whereas your lives depend on it, because being stage four means there's, most likely you're dying from it. And, you're going from one treatment to another and it stops working and you move on to the next one until there's no other option. And that is it for you. So when it comes to the clinical trials, it's really, really important for cancer patients. Like, I know I'm connected with a whole bunch of Facebook and social media groups dedicated to breast cancer, most specifically like stage four breast cancer. And like a lot of people get information, like, talking to themselves more than sometimes with their oncologist. And I think it's important for us to know, like, what's coming. And there are so many, many different treatments coming that sometimes it gets overwhelming. I remember I did a group discussion with a pharmaceutical company about a new treatment coming in for breast cancer. And they told us, like, years ago we had two going on. Research about like stage four breast cancer. Now we have like six, I don't remember if it was six or seven on the way. So this is great, but it's like overwhelming. And I think that, when you have such a condition, I think it's really important for you that I couldn't feel like I couldn't deal with myself. I wouldn't make anything that I can to, try to make it for a long time.
Right. And so I think you both kind of alluded to my next question, and Corinne was kind of talking about, the significance of catching it early and being able to take those next steps. And Sevilla, you kind of mentioned this idea of barriers to testing and mammograms. Could you kind of talk to me a little bit about, in your mind, what are some of the biggest barriers women face in regard to mammogram testing and access to that testing?
I think there is a few that needs to be addressed by the industry. The first one is that you cannot go tested without getting a prescription from a physician. So why? Think about where we live now with COVID. Do you need a physician to prescribe you testing, or do we encourage anyone who feels like they're at risk or might feel concerned to go get tested? It should not be different for a mammogram, because if a woman has to first diagnose herself, then go convince a physician that she has a that she doesn't need a mammogram and only then go tested, that leads to 35% only, even lower, of people getting tested. There's too many hurdles along the way. So women will tend to like disregard it, right? No, I'm busy. No, I've got to take care of my family, my kids. Women tend to put themselves last, unfortunately, in the need. So if you add more steps along the way, less of them will make it through. Not to mention there is quite a few physicians, and we heard it from quite too many patients, that needs convincing. They will tell a woman now what you're feeling or not feeling, because sometimes they don't feel it, and we know that sometimes you can't feel it, and sometimes it's not actually that reachable from the outdoor, and they will dismiss the woman concern or will send her home and say, let's follow up, come in 6 months, come in a year time. So there is that dismissiveness, we'll call it, that is taking place. Not to mention that the mammogram, unfortunately, is not a fun experience. It's a very, I always laugh that it is obvious that men designed that machine. And I hope that more and more women will go into designing, because it's a painful test. Now, I will always tell women, trust me, it's less painful, and Karel will know, than actually getting the cancer and treatment for cancer, but it's still painful. So women try to stay away from it or delay it as far as possible. And I think that needs to change. We need to not just create awareness to treatment. We need to remove those barriers, make the test that's more accessible, not put more hurdles. Women feel they need to get tested. They should immediately go get tested, and we'll take it from there.
And Corinne, were any of these barriers things that you experienced in your personal journey? What kind of experience did you have?
I was lucky enough. I had like a wonderful family doctor that's been, and she'd been my doctor since I was like a kid. So as soon as I noticed something, I got an appointment right away. I also did a mammograph 2 years prior to my diagnosis, just because I had like family history of breast cancer. So I was at 34, I think I did my first mammograph. But to refer to what I was saying, I know like I've so many women that I talk to sometimes, like many of them like beg their doctors, like actually beg, like I need to get, like I want to get tested, and please, you know, prescribe tests, like, and many of them end up with stage 4 breast cancer. And that's first, I'm lucky enough I don't have to live with that frustration, because, you know, putting this on someone else's on someone else's fault, which kind of is somehow a little bit, at least, you know, I don't know how mad I would be right now if I knew it was caused by someone who, you know, should have listened to me more. But I was lucky enough not to be in that position.
And you're lucky that you know also your family history, so you were under supervision. So that goes to genetic testing and BRCA testing, that again, instead of being a standard of care, go get genetic testing to anybody. So women will know if they're at risk. That's again, require someone in the family and going to a physician and convincing him that you might be at risk. And only then genetic testing is done. And then, by the way, it's also the NGS situation even after being diagnosed. Too many patients don't get full NGS testing because their oncologists say, it doesn't matter for the treatment at this point in time. If you fail, then we'll see later. Instead of opening more treatment options to them that could be better, less aggressive, more advanced and more targeted, they're limiting their treatment option by not getting them NGS testing. So the testing is not just for the diagnosis, it's also for the treatment decision. And again, women have to advocate themselves and unfortunately fight the system in order to get proper tested.
Right, and you mentioned those barriers, the barriers to NGS testing and access. And so it just seems like there's a lot wrong right now with how things are going or are being gone about, you know? And so what action items do you think really need to be taken to address these things and ultimately kind of make access and testing easier for women who seek it out?
So I think it's both on the legislation side, basically open it up to anybody, removing the requirement to go to receive prescription, get full coverage for NGS testing the same way we do with other diseases. And I think COVID have really put it in the lightning. The more testing, the better it is for everybody. And it's actually, when you think about it, the cost of testing compared to the cost of then treating metastatic cancer, well, it's incomparable, right? So I think the legislation needs to remove the coverage and the prescription requirement and really push and encourage a full testing for all patients. And patients, you know, the industry, I like to say, and I'm sorry I'm objecting, the industry a little bit patronizing to patients, because when you talk to the payers and when you talk to some of the legislation, they'll all say, yeah, but the problem is patients are not aware. They are not aware of testing. And this is not the case. Patients are very well. We did our survey, and Karine is nodding. We did a survey. 90% of the patient population are aware of what is NGS testing and would like to get tested. Less than 40% of them get tested because of the barriers that exist right now. So it's on the industry to remove those barriers. It's not about patient education and awareness.
And Karine, in your personal experience, and maybe even kind of going back to what you mentioned with those social media groups with people that you've spoken to, have they had any kind of ideas of potential solutions or like common barriers that they see that they really want to be addressed?
Is it concerning gene testing or just like cancer in general and the treatment in general?
Really in general, anything that you've kind of come across?
Well, I'm lucky enough to be in Canada, so, you know, healthcare system covers it all. Right. I had no clue up until recently when I happened to see it on the internet on someone else's bill, how much my medication was. I had no clue because they gave it to me at the hospital and I'm gone home and that's it. I'm actually worth a lot of money right now. Like there's a lot of money. And the thing is, from different countries, that even from different provinces to provinces in Canada and other countries, sometimes there are
treatment that are available in different places, but not here. Or from a province to another, sometimes it changes. And also the cost. I know I'm in a bunch of groups where there's like women from, you know, everywhere around the world. And like in the United States specifically, like some of the women, they're like, I'm done. So I can't afford anything anymore. Like I they have to put themselves on disability to be able to, you know, have some of it covered. So that's, you know, one of the big problems about the situation. Like if you have to deal with your own stress, having stage four, you know, not mentioning like many of them are mothers of younger kids and stuff. And, you know, you had a life going on and all of a sudden they end up with all those bills and, you know, they can't, you know, over top of everything.
Right. And so with these barriers, I guess to point to one thing, Sophia, what would you say really needs to be the first thing addressed to kind of get the ball rolling here with some of these changes?
For me, the first thing is give full coverage and not require a prescription for testing. Testing should be every person right. If he suspects if something is wrong with him or if he just got diagnosed, he should be able to go and get tested. Make it patient decision and not a physician and payer decision.
And Karine, I'll extend the same question to you. Is there anything that really stands out?
I would say the same thing as Via, like even like you have to go to your, let's say here, like your family doctor first to have a prescription, then you have to take an appointment to get that mammograph. Then, you know, most likely they're going to do an ultrasound. So this is all time. That's really important. You cannot, like from January, from when they checked my tumor, it was in January. I think it was 4 centimeters. And when I got my diagnosis in March, it was 10. So those are weeks that we can't afford like losing. And so if I could go straight ahead, like straight away, make my appointment for a mammograph, that would save so much time. That would save my doctor's time also. Like she could see other patients there, you know, that'd be a really, really, really good.
Right. Just ultimately expediting that process, really get the ball rolling. So
rolling and move some of and see the patient as accountable. Let him drive it. You don't need someone in the middle. The physician role is to help you understand your diagnosis, help you make treatment decision. They don't need to be the clerk that signs testing.
Right, absolutely. And so my last question, just to sum things up, is there anything that I haven't asked about that particularly stands out to you with this topic that you think is important to touch on?
I would say that we're fortunate, as Karine said, we live in an era, there are so many treatment options, right? Look at her journey, look at my journey. We're lucky, it's not one size fits all, just chemotherapy. And if you're lucky, it succeeds. And if you're not lucky, you're not making it through. The outlook for patient looks so much better than ever before, but we need to remove those barriers. We need to expedite things and we need to involve patients. We need to stop ignoring them or patronizing them and see them the industry talks about patient centricity and patient focus, but it's not just a slogan that is a nice for marketing perspective. You need to really shift some of the power and also make your decision based on the patient needs and adjust the processes to the patient as a driver and not the other way around.
Karine, Sophia, thank you so much for taking some time to share your stories with me.
Thank you.
Really significant information. I greatly appreciate it. Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening now. Or just listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information and to stay up to date on all the latest news and notes in the world of oncology, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network. Thanks so much for tuning in this week, and we'll see you again next time.